Hey everyone, and welcome to Signals from the Frontline, your every Thursday recorded podcast brought to you by Frontline Gaming. We are your hosts, Kicker, the Chief of Serial and Sigilite of the FLG, Nikki D. Cannon, producer extraordinaire and flannel fan, and he's sporting his flannel today. And I am Seth the Mad Doc, your competitive correspondent. How has everyone been doing?
I am doing swell. Seth, I took your advice from a few episodes back where you said, you know, everyone kind of knows I'm moving now. And you said, you know, you got to have this last hurrah with your old crew before you move. And I did it. I went to an RTT, a local Louisiana RTT. I didn't want to, but I've got a lot on my plate right now with all the events, work, and of course, relocating my family of four across
the country. Yeah, I was like, and you know, the family.
Yeah, the family, a lot of packing. Most of my stuff's already packed away. So I was not a smart move in terms of my sanity to go to this. I've got, you know, I'm already exhausted, but I really wanted to like kind of get that last tournament in. So I went. It was such a fun experience getting to see a lot of the guys that I guess I learned how to play 40K with, you know, this last time. I did bring my crew and I got my ass handed to me. I had a lot of fun. I'm trying to develop the crew squawk, if you will, not the wah, kind of like the wah. Yeah, I sounded ridiculous, so I stopped, but I'm trying to make it a thing. I'm trying to think Tusken Raider from like, you know, Star Wars, like
squawk.
Yeah, the squawk. Especially when I'm charging in with my horde of birdmen. But yeah, I did have a lot of fun. I lost.
I hear you squawk at an event.
Well, Seth, I had fun. I got to see my people. I got to play three rounds with my crew. But I do think that maybe I need to make a squawk button, and this is dovetailing into you right now, because I believe your hobby progress has been very very productive. What happened with you, man?
So I posted this up in our Discord, which is a great chance to say, if you're not a member of Discord, come join our Discord. You can see what we're up to all week and chat with us. Yeah. Kicker actually just today posted up some very useful links for folks trying to get on the mercenary list for Champions Cup up in there. But
good point, though, Seth. Yeah. The Discord, you get like super early access.
That's the first access for basically anything.
Yeah.
Whenever tickets go live, we announce them there in the Discord. So if you don't use Facebook, that's the other way to kind of stay on top of everything. But anyway, I don't know if you know this, Kicker, but when you yell wah real loud, A, it's hard on your voice. Yeah. B, it can upset some players. And I don't know if you know this, Kicker, but there's an attachment in Oryx that lets you do this twice now.
Oh, geez, that means twice as many wah.
So I was like, you know, to save my voice, because I already struggled to like have a voice by the end of a 2-day event because you're talking pretty loud for a long time. I decided to save my voice and to save my opponents, I wanted to make a new method. And so I went on Amazon and I got a recordable button. They make a bunch of different colors and you can record whatever you want on them. So I was able to just get a sound clip offline of a orc wog from Dawn of War 2. And I recorded that onto the button, but it needed to look orky. So I ordered some stencils. Those got in the other day. And then I disassembled the button so that I could paint all the parts individually and put it back together. And that's the final product, is my Orc Wog button. I can record whatever I want, but for now it's Wog. So that'll be a handy little tool for games and also to save my voice.
But people, tell us in Discord, hit us up on Facebook. Should Seth be mass producing these?
I've been asked if I'll make them for other people.
Signals from the Frontline buttons. We could do them for all armies. Like we could do a guard one for the Emperor. You know, like we can do this. We can make these things. Yes.
But Kicker has to be the voice on all of them. That's what I want. The voice.
Only if I get my crew squawking one.
What are you hitting the squawk button? That's what I want to know.
I have maybe when I don't know reinforcements. When I use the reinforcement. Okay, Seth. So did you get to play anything though? I mean, or paint anything, or was it just working on a button?
I was painting a lot of things, Kicker, that no longer exist in competitive 40K. We'll get into that later.
Yeah.
So those got shuffled to the side. I have some other projects I'm working on. One of them is I have a bunch of like, this is gonna like date me a little bit. Fifth edition starter set was called Assault on Blackreach, and there's monopose orc boys in that kit, and I have hundreds of those boys. And they're starting to show their age. They're also like some of the first models I painted when I painted orcs. So A, the, you know, they got, like, I didn't, when I first painted, I didn't even know that you should seal your models. So like the paint's kind of wore off and they're beat up because they've been traveling around for years and they are not my best paint. So I am trying to paint up about 100 of the new boys. That's going to be a slow process. Well,
yeah, that's a
process. But the other thing, I kind of finally locked in some of my gaming schedule. So I'm actually, I got no events this month. But next month I'm going to do two events. I'm going to do, there's a team event in Valdosta, Georgia that I'm playing with a bunch of guys from Atlanta. So I'm excited about that. That's like my first team event of 10th edition. But I'm actually going to get to take orcs to a singles event, which I'm excited about. That's the Rocky Top Game Con. Kicker, you actually know the TO of this event. It's Stephen Valley. One of our judges, for Cherokee. And so he sent me some information because it was actually really cool. I went there not last year, maybe the year before. And I was just expecting it's a 40K event. It's actually a 3-day convention. It's a 3-day tournament as well, but it is a 3-day convention. They have a cosplay area, like a retro video game area, a free board game area, panels, lots of vendors, lots of food. It's pretty cool. It's over Memorial Day weekend. If you're in the Knoxville area, come check them out. I'm going to be there. I know a bunch of the guys from Southeast are going, so I'm excited because that's like the first legal event that I could find to take my orcs to. So some of my orcs are actually on their way as we speak right now to New York because I lent them to some of the Atlanta guys to take to the Battle for Salvation team event. So I have to get some of my orcs back so that I can then take them to Tennessee. So
well traveled orcs.
They are. They're making the rounds. So that's what I've been up to. Nikki D, what have you been up to?
Yeah, hey guys. So I've been busy myself and going over here we go. I've been busy myself and with some hobby work. I'd been a little slow on the hobby progress, right? And I knew I had to pick it back up, but this week I have completed my batch of 7 Plague Marines.
There we go.
They're looking good and dirty.
Yeah, they were done through the traditional slap chop method. So similar with the scheme that I've used before for my Death Guard, but just this was a lot easier and a lot quicker. So that was really good. And that was really positive for me, was just allowing me to paint them faster and also just felt better, right? Like sometimes you get in that hobby, you know, progress kind of where it's not really feeling great and you want to show that you're doing something. And I need to get my painting technique down because I don't know if you guys saw this, but Age of Sigmar has had some updates, some updates for Rat.
I saw that model. That's a cool model, dude.
I am so excited. So I talked about this. I've been excited to play Skaven in the new AOS or AOS 4th edition. And so that part, I'm really excited to run with it and see what they can do. So I also built up a Skaven Vermin Lord. So that part I'll have future hobby progress on.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, I think I saw you posting up recently your nice little photo with you and the Vermin Lord. You were friends, you were hanging out.
Yeah, yeah, yep. I've been putting some pictures of that on the both on our YouTube page, so you can check that out, and then also in the Discord. So yeah, as we've been kind of migrating everything over, sharing hobby progress is essential to keep all of us motivated.
And you know, Nick, you said something really interesting where like sometimes you get in that like that, I don't know, that rut, you just want to get stuff done to feel accomplished. So having stuff you can paint quickly and just get it done, like from start to finish done, is so satisfying, man. Like I have a few armies that like, they're not my best armies, but I know I can paint them quickly and get them ready on the table. And it's just like, oh man, I can actually pump out this army fast and get it ready to roll. So it is it's definitely a nice thing to have.
It it's easier. A conscious effort to be like this, to have different paint levels for different armies, but you should do it because like, the Votan, when we did our thing, I guess it was 2 years ago now that we did the both, like, let's try to paint 2,000 points of Votan. Yeah. Like, I very specifically chose that to be a contrast army and to not have a whole lot of detail work done with it. And it still looks good, don't get me wrong, but it definitely made it a lot easier just to pump those models out versus my orcs, which I try to do a bit more detail with, which is, that was a choice that I made a dark time of my life, everyone.
But dude, I did the Seraphon army. Like I haven't actually ever played
you
it.
Did
but
that in contrast, right?
Yeah, all in contrast. I did it extremely well. I mean, extremely quickly, and it came out pretty well. But it was so satisfying because I was really getting frustrated with painting all those veteran guardsmen for guard that, you know, takes so much time, and then I painted an entire army in about 2 months. So, all right, let's jump into some industry news. Oh, we got something.
We do have some time for some life stories.
Oh, we got a few life stories. All right, take it away, Beth. What's going on?
Kicker, I actually wanted to ask you this because you're we'll say more into fitness than I am. or at least have been into fitness much longer than
I like to run.
You do. So I, for the longest time, I've weightlifted and I've done weightlifting for over a decade now. I never really consistently work out in the morning. I always work out like after work or in the evening. And with my work schedule is a bit weird right now and at my day job. And so I had the opportunity this week to work out in the mornings if I wanted. Ooh. So I did.
Feels good.
I do. It's not so much I feel good. It's just like my workout is significantly better when I do it in the morning than when I do it at the end of the day. I mean, which makes sense because you have more energy. You're just rested. I have much more stamina. I don't, gas out as easily. I need to take a break. I was just like, damn it. And now I'm kind of mad because this like work schedule thing is only for like a week or two that it's going to be goofy. And then I go back to my normal schedule and I'm like, well, damn it. Now I know I'm going to better if I just work out in the mornings. Do I have to make myself starting to get up and work out before I go to work, kicker?
Dude, I fully believe starting your day with a workout is like the best way. Like then you get all hyped for the rest of the day. But also like, let's put this in a gaming like mindset. Like I think that if games started earlier, people would probably perform better. Because I feel like, I don't know. I mean, maybe this is
totally if they're responsible and they go to bed early.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true. That's true. Because like, I don't know, by like, I don't want to be like by 7 p.m. my mind is tired after a full day. Like that's when I usually play games of 40K is in the evening after work. But I'm like, if I just played that same game, the same opponent just earlier in the day, I wouldn't be so fatigued, but obviously work and whatnot. But
yeah.
All right.
I may make the difficult choice to start waking up earlier.
Once you have kids, you don't get that choice. It just happens. That's my life.
I'm not going to say that because I was like, there's no winning here. I understand that you don't have a choice. You have to get up. So kicker. Now let's get into some interesting news.
Let's do it, guys. Let's do it. This is kind of crazy. Dark Tide, the miniature game. So
yeah, I was so confused to see this.
I heard about this, a little bit in advance. I'm like, no, this is not actually happening. And it's happening, people. It's a miniature game based off the board game. So let's go back. The tabletop game used to lead to video games. Now the video games are becoming tabletop.
Yeah, games. And I'm looking at it, and it looks sort of like
what is it called?
Underworld.
Yeah.
I think that's cool. If they don't go crazy like they did with Underworlds and make a bajillion versions of it.
Yeah.
I think this could be a lot of fun. So, because I enjoyed
it. Just make it a one-off. Just like, here's your game. You don't need expansion upon expansion. Just enjoy this game for what it is.
It's a good beer and pretzels game.
Yeah. And I mean, as we all know, Dark Tide was a very successful video game. I mean, I know you played it for a while.
It just got a path to something update. Like, I got a new content update recently.
Yeah.
So, it's still going strong.
Yeah, it is kind of weird though to start seeing, things get flipped on their upside down, and now all of a sudden have video games influencing the tabletop game we love. Nikki D, have there been, and maybe you can pull this up or give me some, personal thoughts on this. Have there been many miniatures that have been based off of off of the video games? Like, I think there was like a Blood Angels or Blood Crows right after Dawn of War. There was some stuff, right?
Blood Ravens. Yeah, there's been, there's been some from Black Library, some of the Black Library reveals. There's another character that's like not Ultramarines. There's been some that have been included. So it has happened. One thing I will say is I look at my gaming shelf that's to the right of me.
No, that's the aluminum egret to the right of you, sir.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. Well, it's my gaming shelf in the aluminum egret.
There you go. No break the illusion.
Yeah, we are in a spaceship, guys.
One of the games that I liked was the Assassinorum Execution Force. And this was the box set where you could first get the plastic assassins and you had to face off against some of the chaos forces. I actually played that game with some of my friends that aren't into 40K. And like, that's actually a pretty good game. So going back to board games, like, have you played any of the board game versions of the various products that GW has released over the years? Are there any that you've tried and liked?
I'll be honest, I have not played them, but I know the Cursed City was pretty popular, right?
People that one was good.
Pretty a lot. So
I mean, this controversial take. I have played one GW board game that I enjoyed, and it was Dreadfleet.
I was expecting you to say it was the Speed Freaks, Seth. Just because that was.
I played the Speed Freaks video game when that came out.
Yeah. That's fair.
I don't know if so I actually got the Speed Freaks bulk when it came out. I got secondhand. I got a bunch of the terrain off the secondhand market.
There's so much value in that one though, man. All the buggies.
Yeah, all the buggies. And plus that was the first way you could get it. So yeah, that part, I think there's been a lot of 40K players that have perhaps bought one of those box games and never actually played the games. But I have played a couple. The Speed Freaks one was pretty fun. And again, the Assassinorum Execution Force is really good, which by the way, I would love that Assassinorum Execution Force to turn into a video game. Like, yeah. Give me that, like a 007, you know, or like Assassin's Creed sort of thing, but Imperial Assassins, let me play that.
Did you read or listen to, I think it's called Kingslayer. It's an assassin-based book. Night World. So good.
So actually, Kicker, I've been picking up some books. I'm going to have some work travel coming up, and I got some recommendations, and it just came in the mail today, the Night Lords Omnibus, that trilogy. So I'm going to be starting to read that. But the Kingslayer, or whatever that one is about, the Assassination Force, that one is also highly on my recommended list. I did not pick it up, so maybe for next time.
Yeah, get that one. All right, so we've got Darktide, the tabletop game coming, but let's talk about the pre-orders that are going live this weekend. Kroot, that's all you need to know. It's just Kroot. I mean, okay, Codex Tau.
Yeah, I was like, there's more than just the Kroot kicker.
It's the standalone Tau Codex is going to be up for pre-order this weekend, along with all the fun stuff, the dice, the cards, and of course the characters and the standalone units, Kroot.
Carnival, and if you need more Kroot, you can get more Kroot.
And if you need more Kroot. I mean, I really want that Lone Spear. So that's the guy riding the giant salamander thing.
It wasn't in the box.
Yeah, right. So I'm excited to try that guy out on the table. And new Kroot hounds, Seth. We're going from, I believe, you're a Tau player, was four hounds to a squad. Now it's gonna be five because that's what's in the box. So,
well, yay. You see, blisters of two, and now they're up to five.
Frontline Gaming News, we just want to touch base really fast on the BAO. We added tickets and they sold out immediately. Guys, if you want to get tickets for an event that sold out, make sure you hit the button to be notified. Also, make sure to select the correct t-shirt size. There's always a disproportionate amount of people getting size small when majority of our customer base attending events is not asking for a small t-shirt. That is, small is the default setting from the drop-down menu. Just remember to get the right size.
And to be clear, because I've seen this happen a few times, you guys don't really make a whole lot of excess t-shirts for these events. You make what is pre-ordered, essentially. Yeah. So if you want a t-shirt, A, make sure your size is correct, and B, make sure you pre-order. Don't just hope to roll up and get a t-shirt at the event.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way. I do, when I realize that we have, like, you know, say we have a 250 person 40K event and we have like 40 small t-shirts, I'm like, maybe not all those are the right size. So I will go in and adjust those numbers manually. But yeah. Atlantic City Open. That's happening.
Real quick before we go to that. I mean, if we do have a situation where there's too many guys with small t-shirts, I think we might need to have like a Chris Farley signal or Frontline Gaming.
I am in for that.
In a little Frontline Gaming shirt. Yes. And like best one is going to get best short video of that gets a prize, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. We'll just Frontline getting credit or something. Yes, I love it. I love that. That could be like a pregame, like Thursday night before we roll dice on Friday.
Oh, I want to I want to Hulkamania out of one.
Maybe we do that at ACO, guys. ACO, the room block is almost sold out. You want to stay on site. There's not too many other hotels nearby. Yep. So please, I've been asked by our team at the office to remind everyone to get their rooms, because when they are sold out, they're sold out. And we also have usually we have the ability to add more rooms to a lot of the events, like once they sell, but not ACO. That hotel sells out every weekend because it's just a popular hotel in Atlantic City, so they don't really want to give us more rooms if they don't need to. Lone Star Open went live this week. It went live less than 24 hours, about 24 hours ago from
I was like, I think yesterday.
Yesterday, right? Dude, Seth, you're going, right? Please say.
I got to double check.
Seth is hopefully going. This is our military appreciation event. It is a lot of fun. Guys, I'm going to be straight up. I was looking at our room block. The room block is almost already sold out. I think we have like three rooms left in the block, and you have to check out on like Sunday. You can't check out on Monday because it is a popular event to say the least. That one, we have a lot of people coming in from around the country to represent their military branch at this event. And did you guys notice the logo for Champions for the Lone Star?
It's Walker, Texas, Imperial Guardsman.
Yeah, yeah. It's Walker, Texas Ranger. Chuck Norris all the way. I am a big fan. I'm you know, I was told maybe we shouldn't do that, but I'm like, no. Chuck Norris needs a logo. So, guys, the Champions Cup is, of course, our big team event happening September. This Friday, we should be releasing the schedule so that you know when rounds are happening. From my understanding, and I don't want to speak for Stephen Corrales or Sean Nadine, the guys who are handling the format of Champions Cup, but from my understanding, we'll be doing 3 rounds on Friday, 2 rounds on Saturday, 2 rounds on Sunday. That allows everyone to get out on Sunday a little bit earlier. All right. All right. And I believe the idea of having 3 rounds on Friday is that's the day when you determine what pods you're going to fall into for the, I guess, the rest of the tournament. So basically, you do 3 rounds on Friday, and then based off of where you are on Friday, it determines where you go.
And then it kind of basically, you have like a, this is me guessing, I don't know, but usually that means like you sort of have like a new record going into Saturday.
I think so, but
you're
I don't
kind wanna... of competing against the guys in your pods.
Well, yeah. Well, good news. That's we'll be having one of the guys on the show.
Yeah,
the
they can explain more to us, but that was, yeah. The, you know, my first thought.
Nikki D, let's talk about some nerd news. What's going on, man?
All right. So nerd news here. Big thing. First thing I want to touch on and is actually, it's a show, Seth, that you have noted as important. Mm-hmm. Fallout. Yeah,
it's good.
My wife and I finished it last week. After her not wanting to watch it, I kind of gave the premise. She watched a bunch of episodes Saturday morning so she could be caught up, and then we finished the series actually yesterday. She is now a fan, and the show, it got renewed for season 2.
Yep.
Already.
Now, no spoilers. Fantastic. What'd you think?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was great. Really great show. Great mix of like story, political intrigue, mystery.
That dark humor of Fallout.
Oh, yeah. Well, to me, I don't know from the video games, but like I loved everything about it.
Yeah, like it's real dark. You're like, oh, this is kind of screwed up, isn't it?
Yeah, but I laughed a lot. But so we'll see. Something else that may or may not be a laughing matter. This was confirmed as well this week. Witcher season 4, no longer with our man Henry Cavill, but mm-hmm. With one of the Liam Hemsworth.
Yeah,
I was going to say which one of those Hemsworth. But they are working on production for season 4. So filming is done. They're working on production, and they've also confirmed a season 5 is going to come out, and it's going to be the final season. Seth, mm-hmm. Kicker, let me ask you guys a question. How much do we care about a non-Henry Cavill Witcher series going forward?
I couldn't even finish season 3 with him in it.
Yeah.
All right, bro. I love you, Henry. But
I would, man, if you have like new writers or new producers or something, but the whole thing needs a refresh. So just changing the actor to possibly somebody that's worse than Henry Cavill's is not yeah, helping.
Just like it was difficult for me to get through season 2. I enjoyed mm-hmm. season 1. Season 2 was like, I'm struggling to get through it. And I got like, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 episodes in season 3. And I was like, I'm done. Sorry,
yeah,
Henry.
Yeah, this is like some weird shit. I'm just not into it anymore. Yeah. Nikki D, what about you? I mean, your thoughts?
I'm going to watch. I love anything that's fantasy, high fantasy setting. So I'm going to watch. But Seth, I would agree, though, like season 3 and how it went along, it really left me desiring something higher quality, and I'll get into season 4. We'll see, you know, I'll give them a chance for changes, but I don't necessarily have high hopes. I might be a little bit like Vince Vaughn's, you know, character in Dodgeball, the movie, where like, if you're not invested in it, it's going to be good. And you know, if I have low expectations and it exceeds those, I might be happy with it. We'll see.
Fair enough.
I saw a rumor, and maybe Seth, maybe Nick, maybe you guys saw the same rumor. I don't know if it's true or not. I don't know if I'm being duped. Is it true that we're going to get a Star Wars episode 10? Is that actually happening in 2026? Is that a thing, or is that just somebody?
Who knows?
Kicker, I don't know. That's a good question. I will note that May the 4th is coming up in a couple mm-hmm. weeks, so we're probably going to have a whole after, because I think May the 4th is a Saturday.
It is.
Our nerd news that following week will probably just be covering updates from May the 4th, because they typically have a lot of announcements, trailers.
Don't worry about
that. We'll just block Seth out for that section of nerd news that week, and it'll just be Kicker and I talking Star Wars.
You will be proud, Nick, that my child's birthday is not actually on May 4th, but we're celebrating his birthday on May the 4th. So yes, very stoked for that. You guys are all invited if you want to go on a trampoline gym birthday party with a bunch of toddlers.
I'd be in.
It's fun.
I don't think I should physically be on the trampoline at the same time as the toddler.
Dude, my son would fly. Like, that's what
I'm just like, physics says no.
Seth, why don't you take us into our main segment for today?
Hey, folks. Seth Kicker and Nikki D here from Signals from the Frontline. If you're joining us mid-show, you're here. We put this segment in specifically for you. But if you're watching this clip, go check out our main show as well. But today we're here to talk about all of the new points updates in the Munitorum Field Manual for Warhammer 40K. I'm super excited about this, Kicker. We've all known this has been coming for a few weeks. We've had a chance, thanks to Games Workshop, a little bit of an opportunity to see some things in advance to get an idea of it. Before I get into what I think are the biggest changes, Nikki D, overall, how did you feel about the changes here?
Happy to see changes. I think, you know, the game has generally been pretty balanced, but there are some units that we're seeing a bit too much in certain codexes and certain codexes that have higher win rates or over reps for tournament results as well. So I think we're seeing some of those things, you know, kind of fine tuned. It is noted here, this is just a points update, right? Right, Seth? So this is the sort of thing where it's not going to drastically change what happens, but we'll it's,
I mean, if you make an orc worth 5 points, that drastically changes a lot, in my opinion.
That is true. No, but I think point changes, good start here.
Yeah. So guys, before we go into our top 10 changes from this update, we got to note a few things. One, Tau are not factored in at all. Tau are, you know, that codex is on the horizon. So there's no point changes for Tau. So sit tight when the Tau codex becomes publicly available. Points will probably drop for that as well. There are no rules. This is not an FAQ. This is not a battle status slate. This is just points, at least at this time. And this particular update does include both the orcs and the custodians, which they have their books out.
Yeah, I think the books were actually street date is like 2 days from now.
Yeah. Yep. So this points does account for orcs and custodians. So what's in this will be what you as an orc player, Seth, and any custodian player will be playing with for the foreseeable future. Seth, take it away with number one.
All right. So I don't know if I necessarily say these are in numerical order.
Okay, fair.
I put them in what I think is the most important order, starting with least to most. Now, there's lots of changes in the Munitorum Field Manual, don't get me wrong, but I wanted to pick out ones that I felt were impactful. So the first change I thought was impactful was the Skitarii Ranger. And that unit of 10 models went down 10 points. And you wouldn't immediately think of Skitarii Rangers as like meta-defining, but the ad mech lists that have been doing well have been taking hordes of Skitarii. Yeah. So anytime a horde gets cheaper and you can take more of it, that is going to just have more tools in that list. And eventually with a horde, you will reach a critical mass where there's too much crap to kill.
Yeah. And for those that don't know what Skitarii Rangers are, they're the ones with the long, I guess, musket, I guess the hooded musket.
Yeah, they're the galvanic rifles.
Yeah. Do you know, don't they have a 5+ invulnerable? They have something, right? They've got some stuff going on. Yeah. Nick
I'm sure they
head.
Do.
Yeah.
Sure they have something.
Yeah. They're the basic like grunt troopers for the ad mech. All right.
In that hunter cohort, they all get stealth. That's what I know.
Okay. There we go. Cool.
Up next, again, a lower represented faction. The Goliath Rock Grinder dropped 25 points for this vehicle. And this is one of the only two vehicles that you can get in GSC. And it is their biggest and toughest vehicle. But it also has a transport capacity. It can do a lot of damage. It's got tank shock. It's got some decent high strength on that close combat weapon for it to do a lot of dice for that tank shock. So there is potentially a combo here with the right units inside getting out when it gets out of comes out of reserve for it to do a fair amount of damage. So I was excited to see that get some love, to see GSC get a little boost. I don't know if it's enough to see a big shift in how an army for that faction is going to be composed, but it certainly is a good quality of life update.
Cool.
Now, yeah. Kicker, our next one, I don't know I've ever seen on the table.
I don't even know how to say that. I'm reading our show notes. What is that?
Psychophage. Psychophage was one of the Tyranid monsters that was released in the Leviathan box set. Oh, wow. This particular model went down 30 points. It's about 95 points. It's like a T9 body with 9 wounds and a 3+ save. So that's pretty cheap just for that. It also gives a 6-inch aura of units within 6 inches have a 6+ feel no pain.
Okay, that's nice.
And the predominant Tyranid list that are doing well right now are hordes of little bugs.
Yeah.
So hordes of little bugs with 6+ feel no pains now. So I think certainly I see those slotting into a few of those Tyranid horde lists and giving them just a little bit more durability. And again, every time that there's a horde army, you need every gun and every bullet and every fist and every grenade that you have in your arsenal to try to clear them out. And so anything that just makes you a little less efficient into them over the long run of that army can certainly pay dividends.
And you're right, Seth. Think about it. If you have a brick of 20 of the little bugs, right? Mm-hmm. That's like you're adding three more guys to that squad. You know what I mean? You know,
certainly.
That adds up. All right, cool.
Yep. So those were the things that went down that I thought were impactful. The next few things are things that went up in points, things that were seeing too much or maybe were too strong for their points. Up next is the Calidus Assassin. That went up 10 points for the Calidus Assassin. You saw her a lot in lists because she had two important rules. One, which was she could take a battle tactic stratagem that your opponent used and make it cost one additional CP for the game. So making your opponent less efficient with their CP. And at the end of each opponent's turn, she could go back into reserves and come back out on the table. So she was a really good piece to kind of jump around and score little secondaries for you while also being able to mess with your opponent's ability to use their CP correctly. So I don't know at 100 points if that's going to remove her from lists, but it's important to remember, Kicker, with 10th edition list building, we build in these kind of large chunks of points. There's not much flexibility in squads. It's not like if my list went up by 10 points, I can just drop one model here or there to fix it. So 10 points might be enough to start making it hard to find that full 100 points to slot her into your list.
Yeah.
But she is a pretty cool model. I have one. Next up is the Nemesis Dreadknight. That particular model went up by 10 points per model. The predominant Grey Knight lists that are doing well right now are revolving around running three of these and three Grandmasters and a few Librarians. The Librarians went up in points. These went up in points. So that's going to start to squeeze that army, and they don't have a whole lot of small things in the list they can drop to make up for the fact that they lost 30 points here and 20 points there kind of thing. So it might be enough that they have to start kind of reorganizing that list.
And bringing less of these or something.
Yeah. One less of these or one less character or something like that. And then you start to wonder if they're getting to a point where maybe they've dropped enough in terms of their damage output. We'll have to see. Now, Kicker, I put these next two in there for you.
They hurt, man. They hurt.
First up, Guard Indirect Peace, the Mana Core, went up 10 points.
And that's after it's already had a significant increase recently. So, ouch. Ouchies.
Is 10 points enough to stop you from taking these?
Well, the thing is, it's already gone up. Now it's just getting stupid pricey. I mean, I was running two despite the last points increase. But now I'm like, oof. And then what you're going to say, like, I'll take it, man. The Basilisk going up 15 points. So now you're 15 like
15 points.
Artillery option of choice is gone up as well. So it's like, oh, I don't know. The Basilisk used to be the budget option, but now that both of these are priced.
Yeah. The Basilisk does have the effect to slow down your opponent. So it does have some other utility there. As the resident orc player in the room, I am glad that the thing that slows me down might be coming less often. The guard thing I didn't put on our top 10 here, but I thought about was Bulgrin. Bulgrin were kind of that they were the meat wall that stood in front of all the artillery that went up. So that whole combo got more expensive. So I don't know what a guard list looks like right now, but guard are a very strong faction. There's been a number of players, at least in the UK, that have been taking them to win super majors. So I'm sure there's still some juice left in that faction. But certainly you're going to have to come up with some new ideas, not just take a bunch of indirect and stick it behind a wall.
Yeah, not happening.
All right. The Marine Menace is up next. This is actually, might hurt our lovely producer, Nikki D. That is Death Company. The 5-man squad went up by 10 points. So a 10-man squad went up by 20. I know a certain Canadian player that is running 70 Marine bodies this weekend in a Blood Angels list. So as they were pointed right now, you could take a lot of Blood Angels for the points that you have. So I think this is needed, and I don't think this is enough to make them unplayable. It just means that they're not literally a Marine Horde army running at you and screaming.
Nick, what do you think? I mean, you are a Blood Angels player here, man.
It's a fair increase, yeah. I would agree, you know, especially for the Firstborn Death Company units where you can, you know, kit them out with really whatever weapons you want to, you know, give them, which is the traditional loadout has been Inferno Pistol and Power Fist. I think they were a little bit undercosted. You know, the points increase here. Seth, I would agree. I think we're still going to see Blood Angels player run them. They're still very efficient. They still work really well with some of the detachment bone benefits that you get, whether in the Sons of Sanguinius or even Gladius.
Sons of Slamguinius.
Of Slamguinius. Yeah. So I think it's a fair point, but I think if I'm making a Blood Angels list this weekend, which I might be doing, I think I'm probably cutting other stuff out and keeping the Death Company in.
Yeah. I think you lose other parts of your army. You don't lose the Death Company.
Good.
All right. And then the last two were kind of from the biggest offenders of over the last few months. That's been Necrons. All of the Satan saw a point increase except for the Deceiver. But the one that saw the biggest points hike was the Nightbringer. The Nightbringer actually used to be the cheapest Satan and arguably the most deadly Satan. If he has dev wounds and just some really good attacks and some mortal wound bubbles. So he went up a pretty big chunk in points.
How many points did he go up, Seth?
40 points. 40 wow. points for that one model. So I think he's sitting around the 290-ish mark right now.
Yeah. That's the single biggest point increase, I think, from our list, right?
Yeah, I think it's the single biggest point increase I saw across the entire MFM.
Yeah,
It was big. Now, certainly, you're still going to be able to get this in a Necron army, and I think you could still make an argument for them. The other big player in a lot of Necron lists that has been pulling more than his weight finally saw some points increases is the Technomancer. The Technomancer has some very strong abilities, mainly its ability to give the unit it joins a 5+ feel no pain, mainly the race that it joins. But the other little sneaky trick this guy does that was just super annoying is he can heal other models that are within range of him in the end of the movement phase. So those really hard to kill Satan, if they're standing next to this guy at the end of the movement phase, they can heal them an additional D3. So you get your D3 from reanimation, you get a D3 from him. It got pretty oppressive with the amount that this guy can heal. So I'm not surprised to see him take a points increase. A lot of the other Necron characters also saw a points increase. The big offenders that go in a lot of the squads like Chronomancers and Plasmancers. Surprisingly, the Wraiths escaped a points upgrade or a points bump up, which was kind of surprising to me. But overall, I think those are probably the biggest impacts to army construction in terms of good or bad, and the biggest impacts in terms of maybe the meta overall from this MFM. Nikki D, where can folks go if they want to learn more from us or support us any further?
Well, they can, as always, go make sure to subscribe to our YouTube page, YouTube mm-hmm. channel, The Signals from the Frontline. Also, check out our Discord. You know, with the Munitorum field manual dropped and available, we'll definitely be chatting with folks throughout the day and through this weekend here. I mean, Seth Kicker, I think both of us have plans this weekend to be. Yep. doing some list writing, right? And throwing out some new ideas. So definitely, you know, come join the community, share some ideas. What you think you're playing now? Because if there's folks like me, I mean, Seth, you already talked about upcoming tournaments. I've got two GTs in the next couple of months. So mm-hmm. I need to start figuring out my list ASAP so I can work on my hobby progress for both Maryland Open and then Atlantic City Open, if you guys have heard of that one.
Speaking of FLG events, Kicker, how does this affect the upcoming FLG events?
Yeah, guys, remember, these will be going into effect immediately with BAO right around the corner, closely followed by ACO. Of course, these points will be used. So get ready, folks. And we're going to go into a little bit of community announcement stuff right now, because you know what? Frontline Gaming is of the community for the community. And yep. we got a lot of people that do a lot for us. So we want to make sure we can shout out for them when we can. Yep. First of all, Lightly Salted. This is a team out of Utah. They're out of Utah. They're hosting.
It's almost like this is where Kicker's going, but he can't pronounce the state.
I've been writing UT and all of my, like, I'm trying to like learn my zip code and address and everything. Anyway, this is a team out of Utah. They're hosting their spring GT at Paragon City Games. This is just outside of Salt Lake City. I guess it's in Salt Lake City proper. On May 4th and 5th, this event will be 5 rounds. It's going to be an absolute blast. What's really cool, though, is that this club out of Utah, they've been doing small RTTs just for new players. Like, this is how you get new people into the tournament, is we have a tournament specifically for these newer players. Get in there, play those 3 rounds, and eventually those players get to go play in the big GT like this one. So I really love that.
I do like the curated, like, this is the new player event, yeah. So that like everyone's kind of on an equal footing, because there certainly can be some people that maybe, you know, taking that walloping from one of the veteran players doesn't feel so good, and that could discourage them from coming back. And you don't want to do that. You don't want to discourage people from coming back.
Yeah, and also you want to play it against an opponent that's going to understand, like, hey, we may not finish five rounds. Like, we might not finish our game. We just, you know, go to time. But no pressure, those newer player RTDs. So I encourage you guys, if you're part of a community that's trying to get more players, consider running a tournament, even if it's just a one-day thing, just a small tournament where you're trying to attract those newer players. Let's get our community to keep on growing.
And I'm going to give another shout out to the Rocky Top Con. Go check those guys out. And it's Memorial Day weekend in May. Rocky Top Con on Facebook. Stephen Valley, one of our judges, is running that. So we got to give him a shout out if we're giving other community people a shout out. So.
All right, Nick, you got somebody? You got somebody you want to shout out? Come on. You got a lot of friends.
Yes. And I'm actually going to give a shout out here to one of our co-hosts, Seth. You were on another podcast
episode. Oh, yeah.
That came out this
week.
So you can check out the Vanguard Tactics, the Warhammer 40K Codex Orcs 10th edition review.
Yeah, that is the competitive 40K podcast.
Yes, featuring none other than our friend here, Seth the Mad Dog, with along with Dave Colmel, talking about that. So it's on my queue to listen to tonight. We did our Codex Cliff Notes, which check that out as well. But this is one of those full reviews that we talked about that's going to help everybody understand the full context of what that Codex can bring. Orcs are going to be, they're going to be mean and green. So Seth, I'm sure you had a fun time doing that.
Oh yeah, it was a lot of fun. A little behind the scenes. I'm actually interested to go listen to it much to myself because the time of recording, we were having a lot of technical issues with lag between Dave and I, even though we live fairly close. But it was recorded on two separate audio channels so that editing could line it back up. And we both basically spent like a good 5 minutes profusely apologizing to the editor that was going to have to resync our audio across this whole episode. So thank you for fixing that audio because I was just like, I told him afterwards, I was like, if we have to re-record that, just let me know. Cause I wouldn't, if we were recording a show, the three of us, and it was that screwed up, I would just tell us to re-record it.
Just redo it.
So amazing, magical work that happened behind the scenes there. So final thoughts for the night, guys.
I have got a big brick of 20 Kroot I'm trying to paint amongst the chaos of my house, which is everything's in boxes, but I'm like, I'm not packing my paints.
You won't give up on those Kroot.
I'm going to finish this one last unit before I pack them up. Right. What about you, Nick?
For me, Death Guard. Finishing, painting some Death Guard. I shared those 7 Plague Marines. I've got some more other Death Guard units for some finishing touches. And then I'm going to figure out, do I build another unit of Plague Marines? Potentially an army I bring for those 2 GTs? Or do I stick with an army I've already got built and start to focus on building and painting up some Skaven? So stay tuned for that update next week.
I think it's Skaven time.
It's Skaven time.
For me, I'm continuing to work on content. I really appreciate everyone that's been supporting our new channel here. We've seen lots of growth, lots of likes, lots of comments. That's great to see. I'm going to be working on an orc video that should be coming out the day after this, talking about all the orc changes in terms of points. And sadly, the projects that got legends, all of the Forge World stuff that got legends. But going through all that and kind of my thoughts on that. But we thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Signals from the Frontline. We hope you enjoyed it. Have a great week, and we will see you on the front line.
Bye.